It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Thursday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, presented as always by our friends over at Exterior Home Solution. They've been local and trusted since 1999. East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows, all that and more. A free estimate, 865-524-5888, online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. I'm Eric Kane, Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs. Got a lot of questions to work through today, but first, Tennessee looks like it's finalized its assistant coaching staff and brought in an outside hire for a special teams assistant, promoted a special teams coordinator, and of course, Coach Chopp promoted up to outside linebackers coach. Pretty much what you and Brent have been explaining, Austin, the last couple weeks, that this is the direction you thought Tennessee would go in, and then of course, you know, we had it on the sites earlier in the week, and then Tennessee made it official later that day.
Yeah, and, you know, we dropped John Bonamago's name out there in the war room last Friday, Coach Heupel, and he spoke late last week, you know, as part of the, you know, kind of the hiring process, and he decided to go that route. He interviewed both he and TJ Wiest. Both of them had NFL experience. Bonamago, you know, is a guy who I think just was very comfortable in being kind of the, you know, not the recruiting the special teams coordinator, but more so just like, you know, being that veteran coach that helps a guy like Evan Crabtree continue to build, just want to be a part of a team. And it just ended up being a perfect marriage for Tennessee. Again, a guy who's had head coaching experience at Central Michigan, who, I mean, I think from an administrative standpoint can help out the entire staff. A guy who's been in the NFL coaching special teams for a long, long time and, you know, seems to, you know, in talking to a few coaches around the league and in college football, seems to be someone that, you know, has a lot of respect out there.
Yeah, two things from me, and then we'll get on the questions here right quick. One, I'm fascinated to see kind of what Josh Heupel thinks about having a real veteran analyst in that group, because he has not been that route. He has had a lot of younger guys, younger developing coaches in the analyst role. Is this something that he really likes? Does he look at maybe balancing youth with veteran guys in his analyst role moving forward as you see staff sizes continue to grow? I think that's something I'm kind of curious to see, because I do think he'll add another analyst. I think he's going to add some kind of defensive analyst to take Chop's spot as an analyst there. What does that look like? And two, I think the other question, Austin, is, what do the rest of the contracts look like on this coaching staff moving forward? You got a lot of guys who are going to be on expiring deals, including your entire offensive staff. I don't know that it all stays that way. Who all gets a rollover? How does Josh Heupel handle that and Danny White handle that moving forward with the rest of the staff?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of see how that transpires, because it is weird. It's one thing to have one or two coaches, but when your whole offensive side of the staff, I'm with you. I think, you know, again, we all know that they move like a snail's pace with these contracts and stuff. So, like, you know, who changes, you know, who ends up with another year or two on the deal? You know, where does that go from here?
All right. So Tennessee football news earlier this week. No better place to cover that or to follow that. Basketball, baseball, recruiting, much more than at VolQuest.com. We'll jump into the questions. We'll start with Bill Volbagen. Looks like Vols won't sign any more high schoolers for basketball. Is a freshman at LMU a possible portal candidate? Rob Lewis.
First off, I wouldn't rule out more high school guys. I mean, first off, Zuri Collins is a point guard who officially visited here back early start of the year. I mean, he's an under-the-radar guy from the Midwest that, just because you hadn't heard his name, I wouldn't sleep on him. I think Tennessee staff is pretty high on him, so I wouldn't rule out Tennessee signing a high school guy. And as far as portal targets, no idea right now here in February. No clue. There'll be a million of them.
Yeah, but and here's the interesting thing for them, Robin. This may be a question a little bit later. I think it is. But, that, I mean, it feels like with all that they're losing, this is going to be Rick Barnes' most portal-heavy team moving forward, because just the sheer numbers.
Yeah, I think the interesting – I mean, not the interesting thing, but an interesting thing. I think I've not looked all – there's a question about this. However, we'll get to it later. I don't know about this about everybody in the country, but I think a lot of teams are in that boat. I mean, Tennessee might be an extreme example, but just because of this question we're getting later, a lot of – maybe Tennessee's an extreme example. There's a lot of teams out there – that have been kind of paying it forward for the past 2 or 3 years in the transfer portal that are getting ready. It's always wild. I mean, it's going to be wilder than ever in a couple months.
Because the turnover is going to be so high, you think, across the country?
Huge.
We'll move on to I Miss Denarius Moore. Who would be in your top three shooters in UT history? Who would be your top three scorers? So shooters and scorers, who are some that come to mind in Tennessee basketball history?
Unless I'm just blanking, I mean, the shooters are pretty easy for me. I mean, it's Chris Lofton, Dalton Connect, and Allen Houston. And, yep. if I just totally missed on something,
I mean, scores, you go Tony White.
Scores way different. Shears, I mean, Dalton and Connect and Houston make both those lists. But I just want to make sure I'm not missing a shooter. I mean, I know there's big guys that can stroke it, but shooters that could, you know, change the game, like couldn't leave them, could have, you know, go for 30.
The fascinating thing about the shooters, like if people watch the NBA and they saw Dale Ellis in the NBA, they would say Dale Ellis was a great shooter, but that's not his game. That was not his game in college. Not even close. You know, I remember as a kid, the Sentinel did a big takeout on the anatomy of the Michael Brooks jump shot. You know, and Michael Brooks was a good shooter, but he wasn't an elite all-time shooter. And I think when you talk scores, obviously Bernard's got to be, you know, your number one scorer.
Number one, without question.
Who's not your number one shooter or not in your top three shooter, but he's your number one scorer out there for sure.
And I put Tony White in the scores too. And it's odd that you talk about a guy that was, 6 foot barely, and you wouldn't necessarily and one of the school's all time leaders. I mean, he was a good shooter, but I wouldn't say he wasn't a Chris Lofton-esque shooter. But I would definitely say Tony White. I mean. And heck, the guy still has the single game scoring record. You have to say he was, you know, one of the best scorers. But I definitely put Tony. My scoring list would be Tony, Dale, Dalton, Bernard, Allen. And I don't, and my kind of cutoff would be somebody could go out and get you 25 in an SEC game any given night.
Another one here from I Miss Denarius Moore. Looking at football, what do you think about next year's defensive line potential? Is it time to buy stock in Jordan Ross?
I think I probably would buy the stock. I don't know if I'd buy, 1,000 shares, you know, just because, I mean, he's got to prove it on the field. But, I mean, I think he's done enough in practice that has caught the eye of the coaches that are like, you know, okay, that's, you know, time to unleash him a little bit. Everybody wants to compare him. Like, can he do this coming year what Pierce did in year two, right? I think they're a little bit different body style, but I do think that like impact can be similar. Again, I think he's still going to go out and prove it. But I would buy stock in Jordan Ross. Defensive line, you know, I think they're still going to be really good. Maybe not as deep as a year ago, but still deep enough. And you know, we'll see. What's Tyree Weathersby look like this year? Like, you know, there's going to be some players that I'm interested to see. You know, do they flash early? Do they pop coming out of the gates?
Yeah, I think my question I think my question, and jump on in here, is where are they depth-wise on the interior? Not right? Like, I mean, you feel good about Bryce Neeson. You know, Hobbs can play. You know, where do you go with your depth on the defensive interior? I love them on the outside edge. I mean, I think they got a lot of depth there, but they've got to find a body or two that can play 20-25 snaps for you in the defensive interior.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. It was the exterior options at Leo. You got three bodies you like. You're bringing, you know, typically you have four bodies over there, but, you know, only two to three play. On the other side, I mean, there's just so many of those strong side defensive ends. And then we've talked about this before. Which one of those guys can slot in and help? Not just on pass rushing situations, but just in a, you know, normal first and 10. Can it be Bailey or somebody that, you know, how much can you help and how much will they be asking that person to help? I don't know. I think that depends on what you mentioned, Jamal Wallace, Nathan Robinson, you know, one of these freshmen. I mean, somebody's got to step up and help them to go along with the Bryson Eason's and the Moyes and the Hobbs and so on and so forth. But I think that defensive line, once again, to Austin's point, is going to be good simply because you got a whole lot of players. I think you got some playmakers on there as well. Barry LaValle, I agree that nothing will change on conference game numbers unless the money increases from ABC ESPN, but assuming that does happen, do you see the main focus for scheduling being to try to maintain rivalry games, making it possible to play everyone within a four-year period, or combo of both?
I think they'll do both is the easiest answer. I think that 6-3 model made the most sense. You know, when you go back and look at it, you'd have three primaries and then the other six would rotate, and then that would get you to everywhere in a, you know, during your quote college career, that everyone stays at the same school, as I use the air quotes.
Theoretically. really they could, the way things are going, Diego Pavia could have like a 1-9 get to every school in the conference.
Brent, do we still think that if let's take that 3-6 model that AP's mentioned, because I agree, I think that makes the most sense. If you go to 9, do we still agree that it's, you know, Vanderbilt, Alabama, and then the big question mark, what it's always been, is who that other primary would be? Kentucky, you go to Kentucky, you go to Florida, Georgia, or whatever.
Yeah. I don't think it was Georgia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think one of the, and I think that's probably where they would go to try to maintain those rivalries. But at the same time, too, I think that one of the concerns that you want to have, particularly if you're going to have four automatic qualifiers, if that's where the playoff goes to, is are you balanced? How balanced are you in terms of the competitiveness within your league? I mean, is somebody getting in as a qualifier because they avoided the, you know, three or four of the top teams, you know, three of the top teams in the league? Do we have a little bit of that going on? I mean, one of the knocks on the Big Ten this past year was their kind of out of kilter scheduling, right? So I think that's something that you're always looking at when you're trying to thread that needle of tradition with rivalry games and making sure you're balanced competitively, that your best four is getting in every year.
I mean, you think about Alabama. I mean, you know, they've got Auburn automatically, right? And then Tennessee. I mean, like, who's their third? Like, do they give them a cupcake? Because all of a sudden that ends the LSU-Alabama rivalry that you've had. You know, I mean, LSU's playing Bama. They also play Florida every year. I mean, like, to try to balance it, like Hubs is saying, like, I think that's really, really difficult. I think you would have – there would be some rivalries that would have to be put on the back burner, right? I mean, look at Auburn. They play Alabama. Well, I mean, oldest rivalry in the league is them in Georgia. So, I mean, like, does Auburn really want to go Georgia, Bama, and then –
LSU.
Well, I mean, fans.
Even if they got Mississippi State, Hubbard. I mean, like, you know, I mean, that's really rough, right?
You know, fans do, and TV executives do, and you can go through that for the top half of the league, and then you don't want to give up Georgia, you know, Auburn. Oh man, you don't want to give up Tennessee, Florida. You don't want to give up Tennessee, Georgia, and then you get down to, oh, there's, you know, Kentucky's playing Vandy, South Carolina, and, you know, Arkansas. That's their three. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what you end up with. But there's going to have to be some hard cuts. I mean,
and that's when you end up like an Indiana situation.
Exactly. I mean, there's going to have to be some cuts that fans are like, man, I hate to, man, I can't, you know, it doesn't feel the same if we're not playing school X. But that's, I mean, you got a 16 team league, and it's got to be that way.
I think Tennessee's third permanent opponent should be, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, obviously Border Bowl. Kentucky's got a coach that makes $9 million, so they're for real up there, right? And just continue playing this game that they've played for so long. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what should happen. I don't think – we talked about this numerous times over the years. If that were the case, the 3-6 and Tennessee had Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky, I don't think anybody would be complaining, because that's a pretty sweet trio.
Well, I think the other thing that you look at, too, is when you're trying to figure that out, is does everybody have one – that justifies that's the one you're not going to lose, the one rivalry you're not going to lose. So do you do a 1-8, you know, like, okay, we're not going to lose. We're going to keep Texas A&M and Texas, or we're going to keep Texas, Oklahoma and the Red River rivalry. We're committed to that. The third Saturday in October, we're going to keep.
Then you lose the Iron Bowl when you do that one.
I know.
Which is a real win for Tennessee, because If you're doing what you're saying and you keep the Iron Bowl and you get rid of the third Saturday in October, right, you'll get Vanderbilt.
Well, yeah, again, I mean, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can do that. But to Rob's point, like, there's going to be, whether it's a 6-3, 2-7, whatever we want to talk about, there's going to be something that goes away in the future of this. And that's going to be hard for fans, because some fans are struggling right now with all the changes that are going on out there with the sport anyway. And so that's, when we talk about all this stuff that the ADs are talking about down there, and look, every point Ross Dellinger made in his story was about cash. right? Every bullet point had a cash value at the end of it. That's why it was a bullet point. You also have, if you're the league, you also have to look at what's the repercussion of the more cash. Like, we have to look at this in a totality, you know, in a total state, not just where's the big check. And I think too many times in college athletics, they made a decision based on simply a big check, and it's got them sideways on some stuff. And that's where they have to be smart moving forward with all the transition that's continuing.
Nobody said we'd be doing math on this show. I would have stayed home.
Do we do math? 1-7, 2-8?
1-7, 2-6, 3-6. I just, a lot of numbers.
No math.
Doolittle Vol, with the lack of proven pass catchers on the roster, is Desaun Brame a guy that can help this fall?
We'll see. I think that's why this spring is big. I think you know what you have in Ethan Davis at this point. I think you know what you have in Jack Van Doorslayer. What's Cole Harrison look like? I think that there's some thought that maybe he is going to be a very pleasant surprise based off, you know, when they signed him, low-level kid with not a lot of options. Kitzelman. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, they have in Van Doorslayer.
My fault. When they got Kitzelman from Alabama, they didn't know what they had there. They didn't know what they had in Cole Harrison. They liked his tape and so on, but he didn't have a ton of interest. And then he's been a pleasant surprise in practice. What's he like when he actually becomes someone that they look to rely on? You know, is he that guy or is he not? And then what do these two true freshmen bring? What does Van Doorslayer bring? You know, I think he's probably physically, from a weight standpoint, a little bit more ready than Desaun Brame. But Brame, from a skill set standpoint, speed, length, man, he brings a lot. So what's he doing over the next handful of weeks before spring practice starts to get bigger? You know, because I think that's going to be the biggest thing for Desaun Brame is physically – how quickly can he catch up to some of the others in the room that have been in the weight program? Because I think once he does, sky's the limit for that kid.
Yeah, Rob, cover your ears. Here comes the Hub's negativity out of that. I'm not sure exactly we know what they have in Ethan Davis at this point. I think you know you got a guy with a skill set that you like, but is his skill set any better than it was a year ago? I would argue no, it's not. He was a very inconsistent practice player a year ago. It's why he didn't get a ton of opportunities. I think from a talent standpoint, he should ascend, right? I mean, this should be his time. I don't think he took full advantage of last year. So what does he take full advantage of it now? Is he in a contract year, so to speak, on the clock? I mean, listen, I watched Vol Club Confidential. I think he said all the right things. I think he's always said all the right things. I think he's got to go out and prove it's my point.
Yeah. I think it's easier. I think for the kid, there's an easier buy-in when you know your option at minimum option two. I mean, everything behind you is either redshirt freshman or true freshman. This is going to be – you're going to be going into year four in the program, right? Or is it year three? Whatever it is. Year three in the program. Like, he is someone that, you know, I think a year ago thought, okay, I'm going to be the guy. And then all of a sudden, you're Holden Stays is here. And Miles Kitzelman here. Oh, it's okay, Miles Kitzelman. Wait, Miles Kitzelman's really good. And like, you know, so I think at this point, he views himself as one of the top two. Mm-hmm. So when you're viewing yourself – differently, does that change how you prepare, how you practice? Maybe not. I mean, maybe what you're saying equates to just the buy-in, or maybe, you know, like I think some kids, if they know they're going to get to play, whether it's at, you know, the peewee level or the NFL level, they get a little bit more into it, right? You know, I won't call it gamer, but like I think that the buy-in's a little bit more when you know that you're going to play.
Yeah, 100%. That's why, like, when you see people come off the bench in any sport and perform the way they did or step up admirably, and it's like you didn't skip a beat. It's why it's so admirable, because, I mean, it's human nature. You check out if you're not playing. You check out a lot of times, and that's just how it is. So I agree completely. You're in a different headspace when you're one of the guys. UTJ36, if you guys weren't in sports media, what different occupations do you think each of you would have?
I really don't know. When I was a young kid, I wanted to be a marine biologist. And then
you watched Seinfeld.
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. I just don't know.
What you got, Rob?
Something with people.
Yeah, I don't.
I applied for a job one time while I was in this business in radio. I applied for a job to be a PR guy for Mastercraft Boats because I wanted to hang out on the lake all the time. And there were some points in times early in my radio career where I contemplated following my dad's footsteps and just go be a postman because I thought, man, it's a lot easier just to get out there and not deal with anybody. But I mean, I'd never considered anything else.
And the money would have been a whole lot better if you were.
Yeah, early in radio. Yeah, I mean, but no, I don't know what I would do. You know,
by the way, I don't think we've ever talked about this. It's always been referenced about your work at the mortuary and the funeral home. Do we think that's why you're, you know, you said the other day, you know, AP, I'm a glass half empty. And I'm like, no, you're a glass empty. Do we think that's because you were working around dead people? Like they were empty. So thus you're empty.
I don't know. I never considered that to be a full-time career, by the way. I never gave any credence to going to mortuary school and making that a full-time career. I learned a lot during that experience for sure. And was around some great workers and coworkers and some older guys who gave me a lot of wisdom, but no, that was never a path. I don't know that has hardened me and made me, you know, such a negative guy, AP, like you want to point me out to be all the time.
Are you a buried guy or a cremated guy?
We were burying people. We didn't do a whole lot.
I'm saying for you, like, what?
No. I will not be cremated. I'm not a cremation guy. For me personally, that's not the point of the mailbag podcast. By the way,
let's go around the room. Buried or cremated?
No, that's not. Let's roll on to Davey Ball's question. All right, and keep going that way. I don't think we're going to get into that discussion today.
Oh my God!
I can pull my father-in-law down here and have that all broken down.
For Rob me. Muted us. He muted us. He said I'm done.
I have an MBA, by the way, so something in business, but I have no clue what that would be. I have an MBA that I've never used in my life. Davey Vall, are the inconsistencies on the offensive end with Barnes every year more attributed to personnel or offensive system philosophy? Rob Lewis.
I mean, I would say probably both, but I mean, golly, I mean, how much college basketball do you watch besides Tennessee would be my question. I mean, I would say personnel mostly because, I mean, I didn't think they were very offensively. I didn't think they were too inconsistent last year when they had Dalton Connect, but you know, that comes back on the head coach. When you got to recruit, you know, if offense is important to you, you got to recruit personnel to do that. But I mean, I don't think Rick recruits good offensive kids. It's something they get here and, you know, forget what they're doing or don't develop.
You know, it's interesting, Rob. I looked this up. I was just looking at some numbers last night. Sorry, Eric, this is more math if you want to mute here at this point in time. But we're looking up some numbers last night. Tennessee's averaging a little over 11 points less a game in conference games this year than last year. That number's not a huge shock to me when you talk about what they lost offensively with Connect. And then, you know, Josiah was good for 6 or 8 points a game or whatever he ended up averaging there. But also, this league is so much better this year than it was last year. It's so much deeper that I don't know. I don't know that the drop off is as dramatic as some people want to perceive it to be. When you factor in the competition level and the fact that you lost a guy who's probably in your top three or four all time scorers in Tennessee history, even though he was here just 1 year, right?
I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, if you're talking about 1 year, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, year to year, I'm not going to go break it down all the way, but I would bet Tennessee was better offensively when they had Kennedy Chandler at point guard than they had been at other years. You know, I think a lot of it's talent. And I mean, you know, I think that's, again, I don't think Rick recruits skilled offensive guys and they get here and suddenly just fall apart and don't develop.
On the basketball note, this is an interesting one here from Vulcan. With most of the season in the books, would you say the Vols upgraded with the portal losses versus gains in basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I mean, Dubar has, you know, obviously been a disappointment. But what are we talking about, Hubbard? I'd rather have Felix than Jonas. I mean, it's not. I mean, for what they give you, I mean, Jonas is more capable of giving you 20 than Felix. But how many times did Jonas do that against a good team when it mattered? not often. I'd rather have the rim protection.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit skewed too, because you don't have JP Estrella, and so everybody sees Tobe, right? And they I mean, Felix's number and Tobe's numbers are pretty similar in terms of point production. Tobe's a better rebounder, but Felix is a better shot blocker, better defender, that way rim protector. But I think that the combination loss of Jonas and Tobe, when you compare it just to Felix, it's not a fair comparison, because you were expecting Estrella to be there and to be a factor in that. So when you thought, hey, you lost both those big men, we're going to be okay bringing in one big man to go with Cade Phillips and go with Estrella. Then you lose Estrella, so you lost, you know, you really lost three big men from last year's team and replaced it with one. So your numbers are different that way. I think that's a hard comparison when you look at it like
that. Yeah, if you're talking Jonas and Felix, I'd rather have Jonas. And Igor, I mean, him and Tobe are not really a straight up swap. I mean, those are different players. So, but if you're talking about Tennessee's two bigs, Hubbard, with being Felix and Igor, I mean, I know it's a little bit apples and oranges as opposed to Jonas and Tobe. I'd probably say Tennessee upgraded in those two players after that.
Now, we got plenty more questions to get into here on your Thursday morning BallQuest Mailbag podcast. But first, let's get a word from our friends, Exterior Home Solutions.
This is your family's first and most important line of defense against Mother Nature. When she strikes, make sure you call the people that I trust, my family and friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Exterior Home Solutions, that phone number, a free estimate, 865-524-5888, or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We roll on with the questions. Another basketball question here from I Heart Vols. Should we be concerned that the basketball team currently has three scholarship underclassmen, only one of which is getting real minutes?
That is a concern on the surface, yeah. But, this is also went and looked at. I didn't go look at everybody in the SEC. And this, ever, we talked about this a little earlier. I think there's a lot of teams. And I looked at Auburn and Alabama specifically. Same situation. You take out Tahaj Pettiford, who I don't know that Pettiford's going to really figure in Auburn's plans for next year. If he is, then, yeah, he's a freshman that got big minutes. If I would be surprised if he's not playing in the NBA next year. But same deal. I mean, I think the best teams, and again, I looked at Auburn and Alabama. It might be – this is a small sample size, and I bet these are also extreme examples. But, you know, same situation. Alabama has got, the big kid, Muhammad Diabute. He plays, 8 minutes a game. That's kind of like he's a sophomore. That's their youngest dude that plays a ton. And again, he doesn't even play 10 minutes a game. So yeah, it's a concern for Tennessee. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, they're going to have to go out and absolutely just maul the transfer portal, or really make a surprise splash in what's left in the high school with Nate Amint or Brandon Burries, which I'm not sure, or Braden Burries, which I'm not sure seems how likely. But man, that because of that question, I started looking around and just looking at the top teams in this league. Total makeovers next year. I mean, it's everybody's so top heavy. Everybody wants to get old. All these coaches in the spring are like, oh, we got this grad transfer. So I hadn't really anybody could see Tennessee was going to be in this boat. But until I saw the question in the mailbag and started looking around at, Alabama's going to be in the same boat. Auburn's going to be in the same boat. Maybe not quite as bad, but yet everybody's old, or the good teams are old. And I think that's going to be a trend.
As Pitvall, for Tennessee to make a return trip to the CFP next season, they will need to do at least one thing they haven't done in many years. Beat Georgia at home, beat Bama on the road, beat Florida on the road. Which one is most likely? Which one is least likely, Austin?
Well, I'm going to go in order of how the games will be played. I think Georgia, based off the fact that I think their quarterback situation is pedestrian. Again, still a really good team, got great players. But for me, like getting them at home early, I think is big. I think that's most likely. Then I would go to Alabama because, I don't think, we got to see what Ty is, right? Is Ty super dynamic at quarterback? How does he play? You just don't know. It's easy to dismiss a kid who's not been on the field, but, when they get out there and they get their chance, how do they perform? And Alabama's had a few of those quarterbacks that have stuck around there and, kind of bided their time and ended up being pretty good players over the years. And then I would go Florida because DJ Lagway is really, I think, a really special player, and he's so tough to bring down. What are they looking like in November, a year from now? You know, no one knows, but, you know, I would kind of just go in that order, the way they're going to be played come the fall.
You played Florida in mid-October this year and won the game. That's a game that went in overtime, right? Yeah, they won the game in overtime. But would you have wanted to play Florida a month from then? No. I mean, they were playing better, as good as anybody in this conference. There's more than just DJ Lagway. That running back's pretty good. They still have Eugene Wilson. Correct. Can they be better on the line of scrimmage? We'll see. I'm with you. I think Florida would be three or least likely. Gosh, it's a place of horrors for Tennessee. But, Brent, I might entertain flipping Bama and Georgia, even though Georgia's at home.
I can see that, too. You could go any combination, and I don't think it's like, you know, one's more likely and there's like this huge distance between the others. I think they're pretty level. I just go like, who's the most quarterback? It's quarterback-driven game. Florida, to me, is more dynamic a quarterback than the other two as of right now.
What do you say, Brent?
Florida's third because Tennessee can't win down there. I mean, they've lost the game every way possible, so they're at the bottom. The other two, you can flip a coin. I know, but that's – I'm sorry,
he
man.
He agrees with me. I'm good. You agree with me.
Well, he's saying the same thing we said, yeah.
I mean,
I know, but Hubbard was so emphatic about it. Why are you even asking me? Why are you
even asking me? I mean, y'all knew the answer to that one before it started. The other two, I mean, I think you can flip a coin. I think you've played pretty well in Tuscaloosa in your two trips down there, even though the first year you went down there, you were miles away from them from a talent standpoint. I thought you choked it away, you know, when you went down there 2 years ago. So we'll see. I think there's a greater mental hurdle with Georgia right now than there is Alabama, even though that game's at home. But
the best you played them to this point last year.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, you got closer. I mean, no doubt. I mean, you know, can you get off the field against them? Or, you know, with the quarterback, you would think so. Early, crowd's going to be in it. I mean, you know, I would probably take Georgia as more likely because it's a home game and you've been a much better home team than you have been a road team. There's one and two, and then Florida's a distant third in my mind.
Also, you compare the two road venues, like Alabama and Florida, it is not even in the same stratosphere. Like, it's so much easier to play and operate in Tuscaloosa, at least the times I've been there to cover games, than to go down the swamp. Wiseval, 24, how many more years do you see Barnes coaching? Then he's got a recruiting question. Rob, how many more years do you see Barnes coaching?
We get this question a lot. I don't know the answer. And I would bet you a lot of money he doesn't know himself. I bet some days he thinks he does. And some days not, but what I say, I've said it a million times and a bunch on this podcast. I've asked him a lot. He says the day that I'm not excited to go to practice is the day that I'm going to quit. Hubbard, I know me and you have talked about it. I bet ideally in his mind, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't think 2030 would be when Randy Boyd and Dondi Plowman are up. You know, realistically, I don't know if he can go that long, and that's not a knock on him. But what would he be, 75 by then? I mean, he's was active and energetic and, you know, just balls to the wall all the time. Was anybody that age I've ever met? But I don't know. I mean, that in a perfect world, I wouldn't be surprised if he'd like to go out with Plowman and Boyd, but I don't know. Hubbard, what do you think? You know,
Here's what I know about Rick Barnes and my conversations with him. Anybody thinking he's going to make some kind of quick decision when this season's over is crazy, because that's not the way he operates. I mean, he will get away from it. He will go through the portal stuff. He will assemble a roster. He's always referenced the Dean Smith adage to me. And Dean Smith told him, you know, exactly what Rob just said. You know you're done when you don't want to get up and go to practice. And you don't know that answer at the end of April when you've just finished, you know, 6 months of basketball every day. You know that, you know, as time passes. So I don't think Rick Barnes makes any kind of immediate decision, whenever that is, whatever year it is. I don't think he makes a decision right at the end of a season.
And I guess the biggest answer, I don't think he has a number in his head.
No, I don't either.
I mean, I could be wrong on that, but that's how I think he
will make an informed emotional decision, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It won't be an irrational decision. It won't be, you know, I'm tired and this is what I want to do, as we've all had those thoughts, you know, with something doesn't go well in our job, I'm getting out of this business, you know, at that point. I mean, he's not going to be like that, but it will be, it will not be, well, I'm trying to get to X number of years, or I'm trying to get to X number of wins, or I have this date in mind. It will be, I don't want to do this anymore. And I've felt this way for a couple, 3 weeks, you know, and we're getting ready to get, you know, into individual work in the summer or the fall, and it's time for me to step away. And I think that's the way Rick Barnes will view it. I may be wrong, but that's the viewpoint I have in my conversations with Rick.
Nate Amendt looks to be like a generational talent, like Cooper Flagg is this year. Are we going to throw the big bag at him, or are we going to try to use that money to get 4 or 5 from the portal? Yeah, no, this is the question y'all are referencing.
I've not been sitting inside the room with him, but my and AP, you know a lot about the NIL space, but my feeling is that Tennessee's competitive there. I mean, if he goes somewhere else, I don't think it's going to be because somebody blew Tennessee's doors off with an NIL. You know, and will Tennessee use the whatever that number was on spread it out in the portal? You know, I would say probably close or more. I don't think NIL is holding Tennessee back in basketball recruiting, if that's anything that somebody's hitting at.
Well, they're going to have to spend money in the portal because the portal's not going to be cheap this offseason.
It's getting more expensive. But AP, about a minute. I mean, don't you think? I mean, yeah, I know you hear some rumblings. I'm not saying Tennessee's at the top, but I don't think they've been scared off by the neighborhood that recruitment's in.
No, super competitive. You know, then it just boils back down to, like, it's kind of like I always, you know, say, like, when the money is similar enough, then it comes back down to the pilot in the box. It comes back down to the recruiter and the coaches. So. I think
if he doesn't end up here, I don't think it's going to be because Duke offered a million more dollars.
Correct. There you go.
45-5 says he follows recruiting pretty closely. Can't remember a time when Tennessee beat out so many top 10 college football programs on the trail for these many prospects. I mentioned Sanders with OSU, Campbell with Clemson, GMAC with Bama, Deshaun Brain with Oregon, Dye with Ohio State, Utley with Texas, so on and so forth. He said AP and Brent. When is the last time you remember a Tennessee class go head-to-head with so many different programs like this and win?
Go ahead, AP. You got one in mind?
They've won battles like this. I mean, maybe it's not as simple as, you know, like 7 or 8 guys, but they've certainly won battles similar over top-end programs over the last several years. Even a guy like Edwin Spillman, you know, pick Tennessee over Ohio State. And so, like, Tennessee's been winning battles like this. They just it's probably a little more glaring this year because the way Brame's deal went down with him going to come here, then, you know, Oregon, you know, went big. He went to Oregon, then, you know, had second thoughts, wanted to come here after all. Obviously, the way the David Sanders thing played out, George – his deal kind of got run when Saban retired. Like, that was kind of like cats out of the bag at that point. Like, but yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, they went head to head with a bunch of teams. I think it's more interesting that there were so many different teams, right? Like, how many times over the years, Hubs, have you seen Tennessee have to go head to head to win over Auburn, like with like 6 guys, and, you know, Florida with a handful of guys or whatever, right? Like, they weren't competing against the same school over and over again. They were competing against a bunch of different schools, which I think goes back to kind of the NIL world, which is like everybody's got some pull and because everybody's got some money.
Well, and I think the other thing that stands out, you're exactly right. The other thing that stands out when you talk about this class is that the number of guys that you flipped or you held on to. I mean, you didn't lose anybody that you had. Like, right, like Travis Smith.
That's right.
Everybody tried, and he didn't get into that deal. Then you flip, you know, what? You flip Harmon. You flip Brain back. You flip Campbell. David Sanders was as public of a fight between two schools as you see. So I think all of that kind of brings to the forefront the notion that, man, they just beat out everybody, and it's been forever since they beat out everybody like this. And that's probably not the case. There was just some real public ones in this past class that it happened that way.
Well, I mean, you go back, let's just – I mean, you just go
and
back.
They flip more than they normally do. Sorry.
Yeah. No, the flip part is exactly right. You made a great point. I mean, you go back to like the last, you know, the decade before. I mean, Tennessee was visited by Derrick Henry more times than anybody else besides one school, Alabama. and he went to Alabama. You know, Tennessee was right there with T. Higgins till the end. Okay, goes to Clemson. You know, you can start looking at some of these where they've like finished second or finished bridesmaid on a bunch of really good players, and you're like, you know, Tennessee got over the hump. Now, part of that is, you know, NIL. Part of that is, you know, relationships. Again, part of it is just kind of how everything is kind of – it's evened itself out. It's settled. And so it's not like, you know, only a handful of programs get good players now. I mean, good players go to a lot of different schools. I mean, look at the success Texas Tech has had in the transfer portal. They got some good players down there. Georgia Tech got a guy like Josh Petty because they had the money, keep him at home. You know, and in years past, maybe he ends up going to an Ohio State or someplace like that instead of Georgia Tech. The whole thing's kind of settled down a little bit from a standpoint of, like, it's not as top-heavy, and there's a lot more talent being, you know, distributed throughout all the other schools.
All right, we got about four more, so let's roll through those, make sure we get them.
Yes, no, maybe 80%. Done. Boom. Let's go.
Ball through it all. I know you mentioned on the Tuesday podcast that there will be no changes to 2025 in terms of the number of teams in the playoffs, but is there a possibility they change the seeding system so that it's based off the rank alone in 2025? Brent, I think I saw some reports as late as last week saying that's probably not going to be the case for 25. They will just start it all over in 26 with a new agreement.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they're going to do. I mean, you never say never, but I think you're probably going to go through one more year like you just went through in terms of seeding, and then you – I don't want to say blow it up, but it's going to look very different in 26 than it's looked the last than it looked in 24 and 25.
But I think we can all agree, and we've talked about this, that needs to change for sure. Yeah. So
and again, I think it'll be discussed because remember the College Football Playoff Committee team is meeting in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure that's going to be on the discussion point. It's just will they really make that deal for 1 year, or will they just say, you know what, we'll keep it like we've got it, and then we'll figure it out. You know, when the new committee comes in 26 and we got more teams and all that stuff.
Bud underscore Fox wants to know, what one attribute would you like to see Mike Matthews display early in the season to establish himself as a big time player for Tennessee?
I think consistency. I think consistency every day on the practice field. I think consistency mentally, you know, in his route running. I think he's got all the physical tools, AP. I mean, I think he can high point the ball. He's athletic. He can kind of Gumby his body in the air and do different things like that. He's got to be where he's supposed to be all the time to elicit everybody's trust.
I don't want to speak out of turn here, but kind of going back, like, I don't want to assume anything, but kind of going back to what we talked about with Ethan Davis, at points in time, Mike Matthews was like, oh, you're getting a couple plays, you're not. You're getting a couple plays, you're not. You go into this spring, Austin, I mean, he should walk in there saying, I'm wide receiver one, ain't nobody better than me, I'm the dude. Different headspace, maybe that helps with the consistency day to day in practice.
Yeah, I agree. Again, it's what we talked about earlier, which is what you're referencing, the, you know, just going in and knowing you're going to play and yep. How does that change your mindset? I mean, you came back to be the guy. Mm-hmm. And that starts with preparation. That starts with working on, you know, catching the ball. It starts with wiggle. It starts with, you know, as Hub said, high pointing the ball, all the little things that he already does pretty well anyway, but continue to improve those. And then just be consistent.
Nashville 615, who do you think has the best chance to get 10 sacks in 2025? Josephs, Herring, or Ross? Collectively, can they get to 20? Rob, I would assume that Josephs has the best chance to get 10. Can all three get 20?
I'll go with Josephs for sure. 20, what did they get close to that this year between, I mean, Pierce and Josephs and
no, Herring, they did not. Not this year.
They did not. I'll say no. I mean, given that they're losing Pierce from that trio, and they didn't get there. Although, I mean, I think that's a really talented trio. But just given the fact that you take James Pierce out of the equation and they didn't get to 20, I'll say no.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think the interesting thing, sorry, Eric, about that group is how much different is Tim Banks with his pass rush package this coming year compared to where he was last year. I think there was so much belief that they were the best defensive line in the country that they just said, hey, we're going to play 5-on-4, right? Our 4 is going to beat your 5, and we're not going to be as exotic maybe as we were early in years and take as many chances. Does he go that same route, or does he get a little more exotic with some different looks to try to generate a pass rush a little bit more than they did at times last year?
I think what you're hitting on is the – I think he adapts back. I think you see him go the other direction. Because, I mean, the first couple of years, man, he was bringing corners. He was bringing Aaron Beasley. He was bringing everybody. And it felt like last year. And that's when Tennessee struggled. You look late in the year, Georgia and Ohio State, they didn't really bring anything exotic, didn't bring anything different, as Hubs is referencing, and they couldn't get home.
And the Florida game in 2023, same thing. Rob, do you think there's a certain way that Rick practices that hurts our offensive ceiling?
No.
Okay. Do you think in 2025 Tennessee has a 1,000 receiver or running back? First 2 years in the system, there was a receiver that got to 1,000 yards, not the last 2 years. And then running back, there's the last 2 years have had 1,000 yards, but collectively they've been over 2,500 every year.
I think there's a better chance that they have a 1,000-yard running back than they have a 1,000-yard receiver right now. That's just my opinion. AP may totally disagree with me on that, and Rob may as well. But in my opinion, I think that's – I would take running back over receiver for 1,000 yards right now.
I'm going to option C. They get neither, but the offense has more success because they have so many different pieces they can throw out there. Like you can end up with two or three 800-yard receivers and then a couple 800-yard rushers, and you'd feel pretty good about where you're at, right?
Like, no doubt.
So, I mean, like, I don't – Is that the option that no one talks about, that they have a balance there? I don't know.
Cover, if they do have a 1,000-yard receiver, Mike Matthews becomes the Jamal Lewis of the wide receivers of the new millennium.
It's a great reference. Great pull. You're exactly right.
Functioning Volaholic, what roles in recruiting should we expect from Evan Crabtree and John Bonamago?
Nothing. I mean, like, they're just going to recruit kickers and punters and you know, go that type of route. I mean, Evan Crabtree was already involved in recruiting kickers and punters anyway. You know, I mean, he just can't go out on the road. He won't go out on the road. They'll come here. They'll kick at camp. They'll offer them. That's just how kickers and punters roll. Like, they don't – you're not going to visit a kicker and punter. But that's just not – that's not a thing. And if they do, it's just swinging by that high school with a position coach that's already out on the road.
And we're going to end the show as we did last week as well, from Andrew. Favorite cereal?
None.
You don't eat cereal?
None.
Nope. Captain Crunch.
I don't remember the last time I've eaten cereal. But, I mean, man, like, back in the day, it would have been something unhealthy, like Cookie Crisp, you know, something along those lines. But, man, I don't even know that we have cereal in the house.
None in my house.
We have cereal in the house, but we never touch it.
Nobody. My kids didn't eat it growing up. I mean, they don't eat it now. Nobody in my house did. I don't like soggy food, so that's cereal never did anything for me as a kid.
I'm going to be the opposite. I mean, you know, everybody knows I'm weird with food anyways. I don't put milk in my cereal. I eat it dry.
So you have candy. you have a Ziploc bag of candy for a snack.
I did, so, like, I mean, cereal and vodka like Jesse Simonton does.
You and I have traveled a lot. I don't think I've ever heard this. I knew this about you. I've never seen you do this.
What, cereal?
Yeah, the cereal, no milk. I've never seen this.
Well, you've never seen me eat cereal.
Yeah. Wow, that is wild. At least you said you didn't put water in it, because one time my sister did it when she was 3, and it was just the weirdest thing. All right. As always, thank you guys so much.
Andrew's going to be really disappointed in that response compared to his last couple of off-the-wall questions that he's asked about food. Hey, sorry.
You missed the Pop-Tart, AP. That was a really good sequence.
I hate I missed that.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us here on the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast. And thank you, as always, to Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. 865-524-5888 online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, I'm Eric Kane. Thank you so much for joining us here. Again, this is the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.